How many of you remember Dr. Clint Zimmerman? Yeah, I thought just about everybody would. Dr. Zimmerman was a man whom I think most of us know. He was a chiropractor who gave up his profession to come to Ambassador College as a married student and then became very involved in the college and in the work. I didn't really get to know him until when he was quite a bit older than when a number of you may have gotten to know him. And when I did get to know him, it was a very interesting relationship that developed because he and I both worked in the Hall of Administration in Pasadena. We did not attend the same congregation, and we usually would see each other in the hallway in the Hall of Administration on different floors, and we would wave to each other and say hello, and that was about it. Well, one day he called me into his office or asked me to come down to see him, and I wondered what in the world's going on. And when I got there, he warmly greeted me, and then he said, "We have a small number of song leaders in the Auditorium AM congregation, and you have been recommended by someone. Would you like to song lead in the auditorium?" Well, my first response was a gulp, because I thought that would be one of the least comfortable places to lead songs, especially since I had not done so much in congregations before, but had at different activities. So we talked for a while, and he made me feel a little bit comfortable about it. And as soon as I got to a point where I felt pretty comfortable about, okay, I'll go ahead and do this, he said, "So do you know why I really chose you?" I thought we were just discussing that a little bit ago. I said, "Well, no, I don't." He said, "Because you're tall and you got long arms." So I thought, okay, well, fair enough. And it was just a nice, he was being humorous, I thought at least. And then I said to him, "Well, will I get an evaluation?" Because I thought, if I'm going to go up there in the auditorium, I don't want to make a fool of myself, at least not continually. I'd like to receive some prods to not develop bad habits. So I asked him, "Will I receive an evaluation?" He said, "You bet you will." I said, "Okay, well, that's just wonderful." I was still in a little bit of discomfort, and so I was just speaking. I don't know if any of you do that. Sometimes some people get silent when they get uncomfortable, and others just speak. So I said to him, well, thank you, Dr. Zimmerman. I'll appreciate that because I would appreciate getting a review and, getting some good advice and not develop bad habits or overcome any that I have." And he said, "I haven't had an evaluation on my sermons in about 25 years. What do you think of them?" We were really bonding. It was just fortunately, I had a good answer to give him. Because I had not been attending his congregation, and he was not aware of it. The congregations were quite large. And so I said to him, Dr. Zimmerman, since I have not been attending Auditorium AM, I really haven't heard you for quite a while." And, I got out of it. Dr. Zimmerman, some of you remember, he used to read. He was known for a few things. One of them was when he would read scriptures, at the Feast of Tabernacles is when most would hear him. And when he would be reading the scriptures, he'd read a few words, and then he'd say, "What's your name?" And then you were supposed to put your own name in the scripture. So that's one thing I remember, to personalize the scriptures. Another thing he would do is have toasts to the kingdom at the Feast of Tabernacles. One thing that I learned very early on was, and I think he learned it from Mr. Armstrong, he was very title-oriented. Every message he gave had to have a title, and he expected it of all of us who spoke there. So I knew that. I had learned that. And the first time I was asked to give a sermonette in Auditorium AM, which was another uncomfortable situation, I knew, okay, he has to have he wants a title. And so I prepared myself for that. Before services, I walked backstage in the auditorium. That's where the speakers met to make sure everyone was there and on time. And I don't even remember him coming up and saying "Happy Sabbath" or "Good morning, how are you doing?" All I remember, and he might have done one of those things, but the only thing I remember was him walking up to me and saying, "What's your title?" And I was ready. I looked at him and I said, "You can call me Dave. I don't really, you know, it doesn't matter." And he actually laughed more than you did. But we did have a very good relationship, and I enjoyed that. But the reason I brought him up and also ended with his orientation toward titles is I have a title for this message that I'm going to give you today. But I'm not going to tell you what it is. I'm going to give you the subtitle just to try to get the thought process going. The subtitle is "Take It or Leave It and Give the Right Kind." Take it or leave it and give the right kind. Now, this is something, this subject is something that is very important in our lives. It's something that we do, I believe, see a need for. We like to also provide it. I have a few quotes regarding this subject that I would like to read to you. The first is, "Instruction does much, but blank, everything." Instruction does much, but blank, everything. Another wrote, "It, from any source, is like a drop of rain upon a parched desert." It, from any source, is like a drop of rain upon a parched desert. One that ties more into the subtitle, again, "Take it or leave it and give the right kind." 9/10 of education is this subject. Okay, now I'll tell you what it is. The subject is encouragement. Encouragement, take it or leave it and give the right kind. So let me read those quotes to you again. Instruction does much, but encouragement, everything. I think we can have some thoughts about our own experiences in that regard. Encouragement from any source is like a drop of rain upon a parched desert. It's a very uplifting one. And the one that I said ties more into the subtitle, 9/10 of education is encouragement. Another quote. When we step back and take a look at the word encourage, we get a little bit more into the meaning of it itself when we do a little bit of an analysis. When we take away the prefix "en," which means to put into, to give to, or to add, we then have the word courage. Courage. So simply put, it means to give courage to. But as we will see, that is a very big subject. Definitions from several dictionaries. One, to inspire with hope, courage, or confidence. Another, to stimulate by assistance, approval. Another, to give support to, foster. And one that I really like, to spur on. To spur on. Synonyms of this word include the following: to embolden, animate, enhearten, incite, cheer, urge, impel, stimulate, instigate, comfort. I think we thought of that one probably. Promote, advance, forward, strengthen. A lot of different tangential subjects that all tie in to the one we're taking a look at. I think we know we see the subject throughout the Bible from the very beginning to the very end. It's a very important subject to God the Father, to Jesus Christ, and to others. Today we're going to look into this subject, which is very positive, except in certain negative ways. It's something that we should long for and also be on guard against. And it's something that we are engaged in, whether we like it or not, each and every day of our lives. Again, when we consider encouragement as a need, we may often think of something to lift us up when we're down, to comfort us, to help us just keep going. But I think we know there can be a lot more to it in that. Encouragement can be seen as simple comfort, And sometimes I think we've probably all experienced from the giving or the receiving end the encouragement of a smile. A simple smile can be so comforting and encouraging. I had a situation years ago where a couple, they were good friends of mine. We had gotten to know each other, spent a lot of time together. It was before I was married, and I thought we had a really good friendship. The lady, she was like a sister to me. We did a lot of different things together, special music, playing piano, you know, different things that we just had a brother-sister relationship that was great. Well, then all of a sudden, one day, I noticed that they started getting a bit distant from me. I could just feel something was wrong. And personally, at that time, I didn't know how to handle it. And so I just kept watching, wondering, and waiting. And I was very pleased, even though initially I was shocked by what took place, but I was happy that she came up to me one day and she handed me a letter and turned around and walked away. In retrospect, I like that. When it happened, I thought, what's going on? I opened up the letter and I read it and I was just shocked. I could not believe what was written in that letter, because she was saying that she and her husband, because of certain things I had been saying, were offended. And I couldn't understand how they could be offended at what I had been saying, because I was sharing with them some exciting things I was involved in at work that to me were very uplifting and very positive, but they were offended. And so I stepped back in shock, and again, I was glad she didn't come and talk to me, you know. She didn't feel comfortable doing that, and I was good with that. She gave me a letter. But I, being the much more mature individual, I wrote her a response and gave it to her, and then thought, well, what's next? You know, what's going to happen? I wrote an explanation of what had been going on and all that. And still, it just felt really strange. Well, we had a camp out, a church camp out, that I was looking forward to except for one thing. They were going to be there, and I didn't know how it was going to go. So it was a small group getting together, and I knew we couldn't help but interact with each other, so I just kept wondering, what's it going to be? And I got to the campground, and I started walking up a hill and saw them at a site. They were there chatting with others. I, you know, had heard their voices laughing, you know, having a good time, and wondered, is this going to change or continue? I wished I could suddenly become a fly so that I could just fly around and hear what they were talking about. If, was it about me or, you know, what, whatever? Well, anyway, I walked up the hill, and I started thinking to myself, you just have to go. You got to deal with it. And I started walking toward them, and they weren't facing me initially, but as I approached, she turned around and looked at me, and it seemed like everything was going in slow motion. You know, I thought, okay, what now? And she looked at me, and she had a beaming smile that just wiped all the clouds away out of the sky. It was just awesome. And it was so comforting, just that little simple smile with the meaning behind it that I could see, that we were able to become very good friends once again. So something simple sometimes can do a lot, can't it? Even a simple smile. I remember a story about a pastor, and you might remember who this was, and he told the story of the first funeral that he had to conduct, and he had been trained, he had been taught, here's an outline, here's what you do, here's how you prepare, and you conduct the funeral service. He had never done it before. It was a lady who had lost her husband, and so he had to conduct the funeral and was, of course, nervous. And I'm sure he was prayerful in preparation, but didn't feel well prepared and, you know, tried to have everything in order. And as he approached the service as it was going to be conducted and he came to the funeral home, he saw the wife, and she was there. People were talking to her and comforting her, and he kept trying to think of what to say, and he could not think of the right words. He just kept, nothing was coming to mind. So he walked up to her because he was there. She knew he was there. He had to interact. He walked up to her, and he just held her hand, looked into her eyes, and said, it's okay. And then he walked away feeling like a complete idiot. Because he thought, why couldn't I think of something more than it's okay? Well, after the funeral, the lady came up to him and she said, thank you for saying the perfect words when you did. What? She said, over the past several days, I've just been worried about this and that, and I've been troubled here and troubled there. And the one question that keeps going on in my head is everything okay? So it just happened that those two little words that he felt embarrassed about were just the right comfort and encouragement that she needed. Again, sometimes it can be something simple that can also have a profound effect. And we'll look into a number of examples of that as well. In the New Testament, we find a word which is translated encouragement in some versions, and in other versions, translations, it's translated comfort. Often they're interchangeable. And there's this one source that is often referred to, an individual who was very well known, someone who really stood out, stands out in the Bible in a certain subject. And often when people think about this subject, they think of him. So you're probably all remembering the Apostle Eusebius, right? Eusebius was a well-known individual. He had quite an impression on the other apostles. He was an apostle. And so he just became known as a symbol of this subject. So you remember him? Probably not. Because we only see his name once in the Bible. We only see his real name once, because that name was replaced with another, because of what he showed, demonstrated, and just exuded. Let's go over to Acts chapter 4. Acts chapter 4, and I did pronounce it, by the way, in the way that is probably the way it was pronounced at that time. But you will see it in your Bible spelled a little differently and may even have different translations of his name that we see once. Acts 4:36. And Eusebius, or Joseph, who was also named Barnabas. Oh, yeah. Barnabas. That's who he was talking about. Barnabas, he was named that by the apostles. He was given that as sort of a nickname. What they felt, if you want to call this individual something that describes what he is, call him Barnabas, which is translated son of encouragement. Son of encouragement. Now, to us, that sounds very biblical, you know, son of encouragement, because we're not used to dealing with that type of a phrase on a regular basis. We could be, but I'm actually very happy that we're not. Because in the Bible, all the way back through the Old Testament, a phrase was used or a name was given to describe someone, and they used son of before that, because they meant it was like he was the offspring of that subject. He was a son of encouragement. He was like a twinkle in the eye. He was like a spitting image of encouragement. It's like, if I know your father, his name must be encouragement. And so that is how it is used, and we see it in different parts of the Bible. We actually see it in our own culture, or lack thereof as well, because sometimes that expression is used without even any remembrance of its history or where it came from. But if you go to certain parts of town, you will hear people calling each other son of something or other. And they're not describing the parents, they're describing the individual without even knowing what it means. But here, this one's a good one, son of encouragement. The Greek word, for those of you who are interested, is paraklesis or paraklesis. And for those of you who are not interested in the Greek word, it is still paraklesis. It's often translated consolation or comfort, but is also translated in other ways. One of the definitions given is that which affords comfort or refreshment. Refreshment. And I think we're going to need that more and more as the heat of the summer comes, as refreshment. But we know what it can mean to us, especially if we're down, if we have anything that's troubling us. A refreshing situation or conversation with someone is not only comforting, but also adds life. It's refreshing. It picks us up again. The same word and other words formed from the same roots are translated from comfort all the way to exhortation and admonition, which reminds us of the wide range of meanings of this subject. Let's go to Hebrews chapter 12. Hebrews chapter 12, and here this is an area where when we read this, since we're reading in English, of course, if we were reading it in Greek, I don't think the word comfort would come to mind, even though that is one of the ways this word, the Greek word, is translated. Hebrews chapter 12. However, when we see the real meaning behind it, hopefully we would see it as encouragement, even though initially it may not look that way. Hebrews chapter 12, beginning in verse 5. Hebrews chapter 12, verse 5, the author writes, "And you have forgotten the exhortation, the same Greek word, which speaks to you as to sons, my sons, do not despise the chastening of the Lord, nor be discouraged when you are rebuked by him. Verse 6, for whom the Lord loves, he chastens and scourges every son whom he receives." So this is dealing with the subject of punishment or receiving punishment, the chastening of the Lord, being rebuked, being scourged. But I think we all know and grow in understanding that God has such an incredible purpose for us and a plan and a method of teaching us and a desire to teach us in ways that start from simple and hopefully do not become too complex. And he gives us his word. And as we follow his word, I mean, if we picked up the manual and went, okay, that's what I'm going to do, boom, and always did it, then there would be no repercussions. It is when we do not follow him that he either allows us to bring things upon ourselves or sometimes gives us some type of encouragement to change, which we should be seeking, knowing what his goal is for us, what we want to become, and what we know is his desire, and he is doing it out of his love for us. One friend of mine in Cincinnati, we were talking about punishment. We were talking about how my parents treated me and how his parents treated him and this, that, and the other thing. We were sharing different stories and also about children and different things. And he really surprised me in his statement regarding the punishment that he received as a child. Because he said, when I was young, my parents spanked me a lot. And he said, and you know what? I needed it. He said, that's just the way I was. If I, you know, was corrected by my parents, I didn't usually do what I was told to do. And so they knew I needed a little reminder and something to help me not forget the instruction they had received. I personally attended Imperial School here in Big Sandy for a year and a half. And I've heard stories from people about what they experienced in Imperial School, and I know there are different experiences people had and different perspectives on them. From what I recall, the first 3 months that I was there, and this was in fifth grade, I received 19 swats. And I have to say, I deserved all of them, except perhaps one. I thought it was wrong, but the other ones, I can't say that. I'll give you an example. You remember Coach Black, right? Well, we had a substitute teacher one day, and she was known as the one who would basically not do anything about anything. Now, being the young boy, baby of the family that I was, I liked to do my own thing, have fun when the opportunity presented itself. And so I did. We were having an assembly in the Imperial Gym. We were told to sit in this section. I got up and went over to my brother, who was hanging out with his friends, 5 years older than I. Wished I wasn't there. Let me know that, but I still stayed. The teacher said, "David, come sit down." I was in sixth grade at the time. I turned to her and I said, "Be there in a minute." Turned back and started hanging out with the brother again. She said, "David Evans, come here and sit down." I said, "Yeah, I'll be there in a minute." She came to get me, and I thought, big whoop. I didn't know that she was taking me to Coach Black to receive some punishment for my inappropriate actions, and I think I still feel those swats I received that day, which I do have to admit I did deserve. But anyway, I learned never to do that again with her. But anyway, I think we do know that God's intent is to correct us, to set us straight, and that is our goal as well, to do what is pleasing to him, to grow in righteousness, and to become more and more as he intends us to be. And sometimes I have had to say to him, "Please help me to change. Please help me to grow in the way that you want me to grow. And if I need a smack on the back of the head, please give it to me, but gently." And I hope we're all seeking God's intent for us, of course, to grow in his way, and can actually see it as the concern, the care, and it's not meaningless. There's no hatred involved. It's love, and it's what he wants for us to grow. Another Greek word that is sometimes translated comfort and sometimes encourage is also sometimes translated beg, B-E-G, beg, showing the range of what we might think in relationship to emotion or strength of encouragement. And that word is parakaleho, parakaleho. I practiced that for 3 hours yesterday, and I'm going to say it again, parakaleho. It might be wrong, but parakaleho is the one I keep liking to say. There's one scripture in Matthew 5:4 that I'll just read to you, and it's one that can have meaning to people no matter what. You know, it can have a certain meaning, but I think because of the understanding God has given to us and the knowledge that we have, the understanding, it means so much more to us. And that is in Matthew 5:4, "Blessed are those that mourn, for they shall be comforted." And we know that's not something that's just going to be a temporary, cheer you up for a few minutes and then hope you get some more, but it's eternal. And that's what God is planning for all of us. Let's, however, look at Mark chapter 5, verse 22 and 23. In Mark chapter 5, we see this word used again in a way that could be translated in a variety of ways, but I think is translated quite accurately, again expanding on the meaning of this subject. In Mark chapter 5, beginning in verse 22, Mark 5:22, "And behold, one of the rulers of the synagogue came, Jairus by name, and when he saw him, Jesus Christ, he fell at his feet." It must have been an emotional experience. Verse 23, "and encouraged him." No, that's not what it says. "And begged him," and then it doesn't stop there, it says, "and begged him earnestly," meaning there was a lot of emotion there, a lot of desire, and then we read why, "saying, my little daughter lies at the point of death. Come and lay your hands over her, that she may be healed, and she will live." So did he encourage him? No, he begged him. There was such a strong desire within him for a certain action to take place. Again, this expanding the great meaning of this subject. Another example is found in Acts chapter 16. And I won't read throughout the whole story. You might want to later, but I think you'll remember parts of it when I mention Paul and Silas. Paul and Silas at this time were preaching the gospel. They were out in a Jewish community, and the Jews started complaining about them to the authorities, and then Paul and Silas were beaten. They were whipped and thrown into prison. And then that night, they were in prison, and there was an earthquake that basically shook the doors open. And so that was an invitation. If I had been there, unless I had been guided, inspired by God in the way that they were, I would have been history. All of a sudden, the guard, seeing what had happened, thought, I'm dead meat. Because his responsibility was to keep them prisoners. And if they escaped, he would be held responsible, and he almost killed himself. That's how seriously he took this situation. And then Paul said to him, don't do that. We're not going anywhere. We're going to stay here. I'm sure he was tremendously relieved. Why did Paul do that? Well, obviously he was being guided by God for what was going to take place later and the opportunity that he and Silas would have to do exactly what they were punished for doing and perhaps left alone in order to do that. Let's go down to verse 35, Acts 16, 35. And when it was day, the magistrates sent the officers or their assistants, the ones that they would give tasks to, saying, let those men go. Now, I'm going to read this in a way that I read it after seeing the whole story, after I think we've all read about, heard about, studied about Paul, his temperament, his personality, the way he handled certain situations, and also when we see what took place here and understand why some of it happened, that's why I'm going to read it in a way that may seem a little bit odd to you, hopefully only until we get to a later point. So the keeper of the prison reported these words to Paul, saying, the magistrates have sent to let you go. Now therefore depart and go in peace. Go ahead, you're free. Now we come to Paul, and we see the first word after this took place is the word but. And we see that in the Bible, and we use it ourselves, showing a sharp contrast with what might have been expected. So we read, but Paul said to them, and I don't think he whispered whatsoever, as we'll see in the wording, they have beaten us openly. They have beaten us out in the public. Uncondemned Romans. And that's what the magistrates did not know, that Paul and Silas were Roman citizens. Remember about that? And that there were laws saying if they, Roman citizens, did not go through, were not taken through the proper procedures of trial before being punished, it was illegal. It was wrong. And those that did that, those that took that action, might lose not only their offices, but also their lives. That's how serious it was. That's why the guard took it so seriously that he almost killed himself when a miracle occurred to let them go. They have beaten us openly, uncondemned Romans, and have thrown us into prison. And now do they put us out secretly? That's why I was whispering earlier. Because they weren't doing it in any way that was any big demonstration. It was just, you're free to go now. Please leave in peace. And that's not what Paul wanted to see. And now do they put us out secretly? No way. Now your version probably has no indeed, but we don't say no indeed. We say no way, right? And I think he was saying it even more strongly than that. Let them come themselves, these magistrates, the guilty parties of what they did to us, let them come themselves and get us out. I think there is a long silence between verse 37 and the beginning of verse 38. Because now the officers who had been sent had to go back to the magistrates and probably say, please don't kill the messenger. But guess what? The officers told these words to the magistrates, and they were afraid, the magistrates, when they heard that they were Romans. Verse 39, then they came and encouraged them. It's the same Greek word. No, they came and pleaded with them, almost were begging them, and brought them out and asked them to depart, not just from the jail, but from the city, begging them, pleading with them to leave and go away so that there would be no more incidents, there would be no more talk about what had taken place, they would not be found out and condemned. And Paul did so, and Silas took no action against them, and I'm sure the magistrates and their officers were very encouraged to see that action being taken. In verse 40, we read the same word used. So they, Paul and Silas, went out of the prison, didn't press charges, didn't keep shouting the way Paul initially did, but he was making it so that there was a public action, and they would be left alone to be able to preach the gospel. And entered the house of Lydia, a member there. And when they had seen the brethren, they encouraged them and departed. And I'm sure the members had seen what had happened and had questions. Why didn't you do this? Why did you do that? How about this? How about that? And they were so encouraged to see, obviously, God's hand was involved, and in ways that they may not have interpreted or thought had the same intent. Because they thought a miracle has taken place, they're free. But they didn't go anywhere. They stayed, and on it went. And how encouraging to see God's hand and to see how Paul and Silas were obviously being guided by God in order to continue the work they had been given to do with the support and encouragement of the brethren as well. Again, the same Greek word is used in both of the instances that we just read. So we do see this subject has a lot of different meanings, a lot broad range of meanings that we can see from very simple to very profound. Encouragement can be something that stimulates us to do something that we may not have thought we could do. One of the things that I enjoy to this day and don't think I'll ever stop enjoying it is watching a baby take their first steps. And I like seeing before they get to the first steps as well. Because to me it is so amazing to see they're, you know, guided along with the fingers or the pinkies and picked up and put down and let's see if those feet stay straight on the floor. And then they're guided along, waddling along like a little duck or whatever. And then eventually they start trying to walk and they start holding on to things and then they fall down. And then they hold on to something else, a sofa, a table, whatever they can get their hands on and start trying to walk. And they keep falling down. So they give up, right? Never. It's like never. And I think part of that is because of the encouragement of parents, brothers and sisters, others that are interested in seeing this path and are excited to see the development. And that is a type of encouragement, but I think there's another type. And that is visual encouragement. They are on the floor, looking around at all these people who were walking, and they aren't. And they're thinking, maybe not in these words, I'm going to do that. I'm going to be able to do this. I see others doing it. Everybody's doing it, but me. I'm going to do it. And that can be a very positive thing, and it can also be something very negative, as we will see later on as well. We see that some throughout their lives are filled with encouragement to achieve. And I think some of us experienced that in our lifetimes and some did not. and some have seen some who obviously were prodded, driven, and pushed sometimes, and others not. And their lives have been much different in their own development. Sometimes they see other people accomplish things, and then they strive to do the same. And we've seen that development in our world in not only sports, but in technology in so many ways. One of the most well-known examples of this type of doing something they didn't think they could do or thought maybe could not be done is the well-known story of David and Goliath. You've heard of them, right? David and Goliath. Everybody knows that story, and I'm not just talking about the bestseller that's out on the market right now, but if you went out to almost anyone, especially in the United States of America, and said, have you ever heard of David and Goliath? Duh. Of course so. Everybody's heard of them, right? And it was an amazing story because of what he experienced as he was being developed, as he was being spurred on, as he was being strengthened by God, as he was a shepherd, that he had the confidence and the faith to do what nobody else thought they could do, and certainly not a teenage kid could do, right? But he did what he did, and we all know the story. But what was a result of what happened with David and Goliath? What happened as a result of what he did and the impact it had on those who stood around, either silently, fearfully, both, and laughing at David before Goliath fell? What resulted from that? Let's take a look at a story you probably will not remember. And I didn't until I read this again. 1 Chronicles chapter 20. 1 Chronicles chapter 20. Because of the example of David, because of what they saw him do, others were stimulated, encouraged to act against those they previously would stand still in front of or run from. 1 Chronicles 20, beginning in verse 4. We're not going to get into all the details surrounding this. I'm not going to concentrate at all on the geography, and I'm not going to concentrate on correct pronunciation of names either. 1 Chronicles chapter 20, beginning in verse 4. 1 Chronicles 20, verse 4. Now it happened afterward that war broke out at Gezer with the Philistines, at which time Sibekai the Hushathite killed Sippai, or whatever, who was one of the sons of the giant. Oh, somebody else did it too. Sons of the giant doesn't mean his dad was a giant, but he was about 4'3" and had very small hands. No, sons of the giant means he was a giant. It's saying this is more giants. And they were subdued. Verse 5. Again, there was a war with the Philistines. And Elhanan, the son of Jair, killed Lami, the brother of Goliath the Gittite, the shaft of whose spear was like a weaver's beam. A weaver's beam. To get into some of the details of a weaver's beam, it's big. That's basically all I know about it. It was big. It's something that was weaving like rugs or whatever they were doing. And here it says, the shaft of his spear was like a weaver's beam, meaning it was huge compared to what they themselves were using. Verse 6, yet again there was war at Gath, where there was a man of great stature. And here they're talking about giants, and here they say a man of great stature. So maybe he was even bigger than some of the other giants they had been talking about. With 24 fingers and toes, 6 on each hand and 6 on each foot. Ooh. And how many of you right now are thinking of the Princess Bride? Remember the Princess Bride? The 6 fingers that he had on each hand? Now we know where they probably got it. And he also was born to the giant. Verse 7, so when he defied Israel, Jonathan, the son of Shemaiah, David's brother, killed him. Verse 8, these were born to the giant in Gath, and they fell by the hand of David and by the hands of his servants. Wow, that's only like page 8 of the Dallas Morning News or whatever, right? Because everybody knows David and Goliath, but look what resulted from their action and what others saw that they never felt they would have or could have done before they saw it in action and saw the hand of God through David. Another example of visual encouragement and action which spurs on to see people do what they thought they couldn't do and could not without help. One of the Hebrew words that is translated encourage is found in Deuteronomy chapter 1, and I found the context of this very interesting because of the scenario that we're going to take a look at. In Deuteronomy 1 through the first chapter, which we see in verse 3, it was the 40th year of their wandering in the wilderness. And Moses, as instructed and inspired by God, is reviewing the history of the Israelites being freed from Egypt and what happened. And he was just going through the story with them again. And he's telling them about their fathers, their mothers, their uncles and aunts, grandparents perhaps, and why they were no longer with them at this time. And how their family members had reacted to God's instruction and how they didn't react to God's instruction and how they followed him and how they didn't follow him and what took place throughout. Verse 34 will begin. And the Lord heard the sound of your words and was angry and took an oath, saying, surely not one of these men of this evil generation shall see that good land of which I swore to give to your fathers, except Caleb, the son of Jephunneh. He shall see it, and to him and his children I'm giving the land on which he walked, because he wholly followed the Lord. So here he was again explaining to them, that's why your parents, grandparents, uncles, aunts, and others are not here today, because of how they went against God. And here this one man, Caleb, followed God. And he's going into the promised land. But then we read what Moses had to tell them, not only after he had recited all this thing about how they had gone in the wrong way and how God was angry with them, then he had to say this. Verse 37, the Lord was also angry with me for your sakes, saying, even you shall not go in there. So after he goes through all of this with them, he passed a point to himself and say, I'm not going in there either. Verse 38, Joshua, the son of Nun, God was telling Moses, who stands before you, he shall go in. He shall go in there. Encourage him, for he shall cause Israel to inherit it. So here, you know, I picture myself, I picture the Ten Commandments movie. I picture Charlton Heston on the mountain telling them to go and to take these scrolls, which I am giving you to take into the land, knowing that he was not going. And then God said, you're not going. He was angry with me. Joshua is going. Encourage him. Joshua had been his apprentice for 40 years, had worked with him 24/7. Had learned a lot from him, had gone through a lot of things, but all of a sudden his mentor was not going into the land and the baton was being passed to him. And even though he had received all that training from the instructions we also saw Joshua being given, I'm sure he had quite a few questions. I'm sure he had some great concerns and also was thinking, I'm leaving the man who is going to remain behind and die. And so there was a lot of emotion in that. And Moses was told, just tell him to go and read the scrolls and I'll be with him and everything will be okay. No, encourage him. You need to be the one to encourage him as he goes on and you stay behind. And Moses had to know God's plan. Moses had to know that it's not over yet. Moses had to know that God's love for not only those who were going into the promised land, but also for him, was stronger than what he could see. And that he was encouraged with this knowledge, that he did feel God's intervention in his life, the strength that God had built in him, the faith, the knowledge, the assurances that he could encourage, or should we say pass on, the encouragement God had built in him to Joshua as he went forward. What a situation to be in. What a responsibility. The Hebrew word that is used here also includes some of the following definitions: to strengthen, prevail, harden, become strong, be courageous, be firm, grow firm, be secure, make bold, repair, and of course, encouragement. And we can see all of these relate to this subject as well in a wide variety of ways. Now I'd like us to step into the word courage to take a look at that, because we do see the word encourage does mean to give courage to or to inspire with courage. And I think we've seen quite clearly that this can mean basic courage or just a basic type of sustenance along with much more. And it's interesting as we look into the root of this word in the English language to see where it came from and where it initially got its meaning, which can be appreciated, held on to, or lost. Its root is traced back to an old French word. A lot of you know my wife was born in Montreal. French is her first language. And one of the most important phrases or sentences that she taught me, and she said, "This is very important for me, for you to learn. It's very important to me, and I want you to learn it." And she spent a good amount of time. How many of you speak French, by the way? Okay, those who do, forgive me, and don't report on my wife to what I do. But she did teach me this important phrase, and I do try to say it correctly. She accepts it the way I say it. She taught me to say, "Je t'aime de tout mon cœur." Je t'aime de tout mon cœur. Literally, that means "je t'aime," I love you. De tout, with all. Mon cœur, my courage. No, that's not it. Can you imagine if it meant that? If she said to me, "David, I love you with all the courage I have." Yeah, I guess we have to talk about this. No, je t'aime de tout mon cœur, the word cœur means all my heart. Heart. That's where we get the word courage, is from the French word, the old French word, heart. My very being. What gives me life? What sustains me? What keeps me going onward and upward? What helps me through my difficulties? My heart, my very being, my very essence. A definition of courage includes the quality of mind or spirit that enables a person to face difficulty, danger, pain, without fear. Bravery. And I think we all know we can fine-tune that a little to be with less fear in some cases, where we go through, even though there may be some fear, the courage is there. And that is related to our heart. Why? Because of the great hope within us. Because of the great confidence of what lies ahead. Of what the result of the confidence and the courage will be. What the outcome will be as we stick it through with whatever help we need. One lexicon defines courage as the follows. Across the races and generations of men, courage has been a widely celebrated virtue. The Greeks had a word for it, and they ranked it among the four cardinal virtues. The Bible has its roll call of heroes who were courageous in battle and in martyrdom. But courage in the Bible does not usually stand as an independent virtue. It is generally found in a religious context. It is inspired by God. It is exhibited in the service of God. The true courage, the courage that really matters, the courage that is the most important in our lives, and the source of that true courage being God. I think we've reached kind of like the peak of that courage, of encouragement, and so now we're going to jump off the cliff. Because now we have to look at another type of courage, another type of encouragement, because it is very important for us in our lives, especially important to our young people, but tremendously important to us as well, each and every one of us, especially in the world we live in, and as what we see going on around us that will increase dramatically, as if we haven't seen that already taking place in this world. Let's go right to a scripture regarding encouragement that spells it out, Psalm 64. Psalm 64. And here we read the beginning, as often we read in the Psalms, of different trials that David was going through, different prayers that he would pray. Psalm 64, beginning in verse 1. Hear my voice, O God, in my meditation. Preserve my life from fear of the enemy. Hide me from the secret plots of the wicked, from the rebellion of the workers of iniquity, who sharpen their tongue like a sword, and bend their bows to shoot their arrows bitter words, that they may shoot in secret at the blameless. Suddenly they shoot at him and do not fear. Verse 5 is what I really want us to see standing out. They encourage themselves in an evil matter. They encourage themselves in an evil matter. And that is what we see, as was mentioned before. Throughout the Bible, we see this subject from the very Garden of Eden. And we see that in the world around us about all of the encouragement to do it. Just do it. Do whatever you feel works for you. Are you scared to do it? Everybody else is. Don't you see? Aren't you receiving the visual encouragement? And aren't you hearing? You think you can't do it? You can do it. And it's going to be great. It's better than what you might think. Doesn't this sound like what Satan was saying to Eve in the Garden of Eden? Trying to convince her, prod her on, spur her to do what was against God's plan. And again, this is what we see all around us, and it's not going to lighten up at all, is it? It's going to continue going stronger and stronger in the world around us. And not only for the young people. Not only in high school, not only in grade school, not only in college, in the workplace, and of course in entertainment that continues going in that direction. We have to look at our sources of encouragement. Do we need encouragement? I think we all do. I think we all see that. But we have to know that we need encouragement to one degree or another, and have to ask ourselves, is this the type of encouragement I want? Am I aware that this is attempting to encourage me, to prod me on, to spur me, to strengthen me, to do something that I should be avoiding? We are to have this instilled in us, hopefully the right kind of courage and encouragement, from our experiences in our walk with Jesus Christ and with each other. And at times we can get it from within our own selves. And we see an example of this that I'll read to you in 1 Samuel chapter 30. Because God is guiding us, God is strengthening us as we follow him as we have just gone through the Passover, the days of unleavened bread, are looking forward to Pentecost and know that God is strengthening us. We are not just empty shells, but are to be strengthened and guided and have it within us, as we see David exemplify here in 1 Samuel 30, verse 6. It says, "Now David was greatly distressed, for the people spoke of stoning him." Yes, I can understand why that would be a very distressing situation. "Because the soul of all the people was grieved, every man for his sons and daughters. But David strengthened himself in the Lord his God." He found the strength of God within him. And that is where he was able to remember the past, remember the triumphs, and feel the strength of God within him. We can also get it from each other, again, depending on the thought processes that have been developed within us. Paul gave a statement in 1 Thessalonians 5, where he said in verse 11, 1 Thessalonians 5:11, "Therefore encourage one another and build one another up just as you were doing." That was a very encouraging way of putting it. He wasn't correcting them. He was saying, you're doing it, keep doing it. It is needed for all of you. You all need to continue doing this. Build each other up, of course, in God's way. We have actually been called to be encouragers, to grow to be more of the right kind, and just to go off on a slight tangent, whether we like it or not, we can be encouragers without even having a thought. And that can be in a very good way, and that can be in a very bad way. That is by our examples. That is by our communication or lack of communication. I remember growing up in the church, and I do believe I'm still growing up, I hope, but where sometimes people would be wanting to do things or thinking about doing things and just needed a little prod, needed a little encouragement, needed a pat on the back to help them to accomplish more, to serve more, to become more. And others seemed to be hungering for a little bit of encouragement to be accepted for doing things that they shouldn't do, or not doing what they should do, and avoiding what they knew was right. And by either our actions, by our words, or our lack of words, we can too easily encourage in one way or another. And we are to have the love of God that is more than the world understands love to be. What a contrast there is, of course, with the love of this world saying, accept everyone as they are and just give everybody a, do your thing, man, you're great. Instead of having the love that says, man, this is not good. This is going to head you down the wrong path. Can I help you with something? Or whatever that we can do as brothers and sisters of Jesus Christ and each other. So again, to one degree or another, based on our own growth and development, which hopefully is continually taking place, we can encourage each other in the right way and avoid doing so in the wrong way. And definitely, if we desire it, if we long for it, if we seek it, and if we ask for it, we can get it from the source of true and solid encouragement from God the Father and from Jesus Christ through the Comforter, Encourager, the Holy Spirit, that which God works through and is in us. When I was on a trip recently, of course, I was staying in a hotel, and in the bedstand was Gideon's Bible. Has anyone ever seen one of those? And in the front of Gideon's Bible, they have the verse that is translated into more languages than any other verse in the Bible, John 3:16. John 3:16, and they stopped at the end of verse 16. "For God so loved the world that he gave his only begotten Son, that whosoever believes in him should not perish but have everlasting life." Verse 17 we read, which they did not translate. They found that to be a sufficient statement and, in many cases, an end-all for people. Verse 17, "For God did not send his Son into the world to condemn the world, but that the world through him might be saved." And there's a lot in there that we are aware of because of the understanding that God has given to us. And we know also Jesus Christ made the statement that we read in Hebrews 13, verse 5, I will never leave you or forsake you, that it is only we who can depart from him, that he is always wanting to have us near him and will never abandon us, no matter what, unless we abandon him. Let's go to Philippians chapter 3. Philippians chapter 3. And I'll be reading from the Revised Standard Version. And in here, I believe we can see the encouragement that we can seek and where we can seek it from. Philippians chapter 3, beginning in verse 12, Paul writes, not that I have already obtained this or am already perfect. I guess we can all identify with that one, huh? But I press on to make it my own, because Christ Jesus has made me his own. Brethren, I do not consider that I have made it on my own, but one thing I do, forgetting what lies behind and straining forward to what lies ahead. I press on toward the goal of the prize of the upward call, or high calling, as translated elsewhere, of God in Jesus Christ. And that is the pressing on that we have been called to, and the meaning in our life that surpasses the meaning that our own physical lives can have at any time. We've looked at this subject. We've seen that it can range from something very simple to something very profound. We've seen that we need to be on guard regarding encouragement, which can lead us and others that we interact with in the wrong direction and stir us again, or others that we do influence to one degree or another, in the wrong way, which we have to be on guard against. We've also seen that we can find encouragement and hopefully will grow in finding the right kind of encouragement within ourselves as strengthened and developed by God, within each other as strengthened and developed by God, and from God himself. So let's remember about encouragement. Take it or leave it, and give the right kind.